I don't want to rule or conquer anyone. I should like to help everyone if possible. Jew, Gentile, black man, white. We all want to help one another. Human beings are like this. We want to live by each other.
When one is able to repeatedly step into the purity and heart and space of genuine and heightened awareness, miracles manifest, conscious evolution becomes inevitable, and the revelations to one's spirit becomes revolutionary within the simplicity of its own essence. Awakening then becomes of it to where the destination of such a path, when one has answered to the calling, unfolds to reveal the ripening of one's universal truths. The book of positive light, remembrance of the heart.
Okay, and so welcome back to Quantum Mindfulness Radio, and I'm your host, Joel Ayala Ayapanya, registered nurse and author of the Book of Positive Light, Remembrance of the Heart. Quantum Mindfulness Radio broadcasts every other Monday, 8 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, only on the BBS Radio Network. And so for tonight's show, we will be conversing about the wonder, the intrigue, and science of sacred geometry, synchronicity, spirituality, initiation, and the mystery schools of Pythagoras, and how it all relates to furthering discussion of global awakening, and more specifically, the rise of the Phoenix. And I have with me to talk about this intriguing topic is world-renowned writer and expert on ancient indigenous culture and spiritual tradition, as it more or less pertains to the sacred effigy mounds of the Ohio Valley regions of southern Ohio. He is the author of many books, The Mystery of the Serpent Mound, A Tradition of Giants, and his most recent work, Star Mounds, Legacy of a Native American Mystery. And so I have with me tonight, Mr. Douglas Ross Hamilton. And so welcome, dear Ross. Welcome, dear friend, to Quantum Mindfulness Radio.
Well, it's my pleasure, Joel. It's my pleasure.
Now, Ross, can you be able to discuss a little bit about you and your passion with Native American tradition, sacred sites, astronomy, sacred geometry, and how it all relates to your work with your research on these ancient mound builders of the southern Ohio Valley region?
Well, it goes back to the time, I'm in my mid-60s now. It goes back way back when to when I was in my late teens and early 20s, when I was just fascinated by the Eastern mystical lifestyle and the message of the Indian masters, the East Indian masters. So I read what I could on the subject, and with my good luck received initiation from a perfect master of spiritual science, Sant Kapal Singh. Way back in 1969, I was only able to communicate with my master on this level, on the physical level, for 5 years before he passed away. He was already an older man, but there's no bar to advancing on the spiritual path as long as you receive initiation from a master before he's passed away physically. So that was how I got started. And now, after, a good 45 years of meditation, sometimes for as long as 9 hours a day, and sometimes as short as just 1 or 2 hours, I think that I have a basic grip on the universal tenets of the situation of humankind with their earthly environment and their native environment, their spiritual environment. Now, what's interesting about a study in spirituality, which is what I've had to do over the years along with my meditations, is that most people like to consider themselves as belonging to some sort of a belief system, whether it's something that they created for themselves, you know, going fishing on Saturday, and, you know, just believing in your God-given right to be a free person and do what he or she wishes. Or if you're an atheist, you prohibit yourself from believing that there is a creator, or an agnostic who doesn't believe but is willing to be shown, or a member of any one of the organized social religions, we still tend to organize ourselves to a belief system. And these belief systems that we all have, no two are exactly alike, they all culminate in wanting to have an answer to a question. And that question is almost always the same for all of us, if not the same, once enough thought and you know, prayer and meditation is put into it. And that question is, what am I if I live beyond the body? And if I'm not scheduled to live beyond the body, what am I? Because I don't feel as though I am the body. And you'll find that to be pretty conclusive, although you'll have many people who will say, well, when I die, that's it, you know. Well, what I found about the Serpent Mound is that it satisfies virtually everyone's belief system, whether you're a fisherman trying to hook the truth or figure out, you know, what the mystery of life is or the rhythms of nature, or you're a devout Catholic saint who spends all of his or her time levitating on his knees in a private sanctuary, communing with God all the time. Or you're a Hindu master of yoga who knows the secret of the breath and can put himself into a state of higher consciousness called samadhi for weeks at a time without needing food. We all have that same burning desire to pursue the truth. And it's that pursuit of truth that led me to understanding that the Serpent Mound of Adams County, Ohio, was an anciently conceived icon or graphic image of that which cannot be portrayed as an image. I know that sounds like a conundrum, but the serpent is something that was put into a form that describes the formless, the truth of all things, that which was before the universe was created. Now, Joel, have you ever thought this question, where did anything come from?
Many times throughout life, just when you think you had understood the philosophy or the understanding or the spirituality of where everything came from, then something comes up and tests your whole belief system as to what that is actually rooted from. So yes, many times within my life.
Yeah, you know, even our foremost physicists of today, who want to skirt the issue, they say, well, there is no God, but that there was gravity before there was matter, and matter just came into being. It just came into manifestation. So they never really get down to the issue of, you know, what is consciousness? If there is a creator, how was it that the creator came into existence?
Right.
And so forth. So these are the same questions that the fisherman attaches himself to, or the Buddhist monk, or the housewife who has a spare moment between soccer matches. You know, these are the things that all of us have in common. What the heck are we? Where did we come from? What's the source of consciousness and physical? And are there heavenly universes above ours where matter is more delicately structured? You know, the ethereal forms of matter. And all these things are dealt with in little fragments throughout all the religious scriptures and many of the writings of the philosophers. But what I found, Joel, is that in the Serpent Mound, you find a link to all of the philosophers, all of the religions,
yes,
seem to find a root in the image of what we call the Serpent Mound.
Hi, this is singer-songwriter Kara Johnstad, and you're listening to BBS Radio. If it's not mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com.
Hi there, this is Christoph Goes. You'll be listening to new tracks from my new album Turning Inside right here on BBS Radio, because if it's not mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com.
You're listening to BBS Radio. An internet radio experience of truth, harmony, beauty. From your family at BBS Radio, have yourself a beautiful day.
And it's just fascinating when you do a lifelong study, which of course I've had to do. It takes a long time. And I'm not nearly to the end of it. I mean, you and I just had a conversation before we started this show, and I learned something from you, several things from you, when I was listening to what you had to say,
right,
about the Pythagorean theorem. And it's an ongoing, never-ending process of learning. But what I found is that I can always relate everything back to the serpent or the sphere or the circle, that the serpent is contained within. And there comes from that all the knowledge of physics and metaphysics, geometry, astronomy, earth energies, climate energies, gardening, how to grow things, where seeds came from, why seeds are magically contained within them, the form of the plant, and why we scientists can't really confirm that image, and yet somehow the DNA of the plant is able to resurrect that image. And that same thing I found, that same understanding, is in the soul of man. Man's soul is actually a seed of a human form. And once it's planted in the proper environment, a man comes forth.
Yes.
Now the Creator decided to make this process more beautiful and divided the creation into separate parts, the male part and the female part. And so, considering that the human form is the creation, then we find that part of the mystery is contained within the egg of the woman, and another part of the mystery is contained within the sperm of the man. And when these two elements are brought together with love, then that temple, that body, which the Indian masters teach us is the shape of the cosmos itself, and that we're just microcosmoses, all of us are microcosms of the macrocosm.
Right. And just to interject about the male and female coming in together, that kind of reminds me of the Star of David. And please correct me if I'm going astray. The Star of David, it has, and thinking geometrically, the Star of David has two triangles, one that is inverted to depict the female nurturing of things, and then the upright, erected form of the triangle that is depictable of the male symbolism. And so when you put those two together, it's the combination, the shaking of hands of both male
That's
and feminine energies. Yes.
See, there you go. I just learned from you again. It's like you're my teacher. No, seriously, when you take a hexagram and you reduce it to a hexagon, a hexagon comes out of a circle.
Yes.
The seed of the soul. The soul is in a spherical shape when it has no bodies and inhabits. And do you know that six circles that have the same diameter will fit around one circle?
Oh.
And nobody knows.
I didn't know that. No.
Nobody knows why. It's like
it just does.
Ancient,
right.
The mysteries of God that six circles fit perfectly around a single circle. So if you take a penny, you know, all pennies are the same diameter, or a dime or a nickel, and you lay it down on a flat table, six other pennies will fit perfectly around it, touching each other, without any gaps or any problems. And that's what we think is one of the great mysteries of geometry. There's actually three great mysteries of geometry. One is why six circles fit around one, and they think that's where, you know, God created the universe in 7 days, but on the seventh day, God rested. Well, that's the resting point in the middle of the other six. And that's one of the old mystery colleges' great axioms that they tested the initiate to get into the college. Well, if God created the universe in 6 days, where does God rest? And, you know, nobody knows. On the seventh day, well, it's Sunday, but, you know, they don't know from Sunday. And then, well, then they pull out the circle and they show them that if you create. And then that's their first initiation into the mysteries of geometry.
Oh, no, check this out. I'm not really sure if you had noticed the tattoo on my left forearm. It is the tattoo of the flower of life. And when you mentioned the six circles, of which I didn't really know consciously in awareness, I looked at the very central portion of my tattoo of the flower of life, and there's six circles. And from what my understanding, that inner portion of the flower of life, which is a main focus of what the flower of life is, what is revealed superficially, it is called the seed of life. And how you made reference to many symbolisms about the seed of life, or the seed in itself. So that's a very synchronistic type of thing.
Yeah, when we're talking about the circle, we're talking about the greatest geometric mystery of all time. You know, Native American cultures, they all reverenced the circle as being the Great Spirit, the representative of it, and that there was no power in any of the other geometric forms compared to the circle. You know, pi is an irrational decimal that never stops adding to itself, and that's the ratio of the diameter of a circle to its circumference.
Right.
And, you know, if you can't finish calculating it, that means that the circle is a living thing. Even though the process gets so subtle you can't tell, it appears to be stagnant, it's not. All circles have something of a creator emanating from it. So, you know, that's one of the great geometric mysteries. Another one is the Pythagorean theorem,
yes,
which you and I talked about.
Very much so.
And the Pythagorean theorem states, and it's also the 47th proposition of Euclid. Pythagoras was before Euclid, but in any case, Pythagoras is believed to have gotten it from a much earlier source, but by Pythagoras' time, he was a great traveler and collector of knowledge from different countries and different cultures and cults and belief systems. And by the time he got it, nobody knew exactly where it came from, so they called it the Theorem of Pythagoras.
Right.
So it says that if you have a right-angled triangle, that and if you create squares off of each of the sides of the right-angled triangle, the squares that make up the right angle, let's say your triangle is 3, 4, 5, are equal in area to the square of the third side. So when you see any right-angled triangle, you know that the two lines that compose the right angle, if you make squares out of them and you can measure the area, those areas will be equal to the square of the third line, which Pythagoras called the hypotenuse. And nobody knows why. It's just like the six circles surrounding the first. It's just this magical thing that no matter how you stretch out the right angle triangle, it's always the same. The sum of the squares of the right angle equal the square of the hypotenuse.
Wow.
And it's just incredible.
It really is.
it's magical, and you can relate all kinds of wisdom to it. But if you begin to combine the two things, the circle with its six circles, with that, you include the flower of life, and you include the mysteries of the Serpent Mound too,
exactly.
Because the Serpent Mound works equally well with the theorem of Pythagoras and Euclid as it does with the circle and the flower of life. So the serpent seems to conjoin the knowledge and the wisdom of both these wonderful, mysterious geometric axioms. Now, let me just say this for a second, Joel. If there were people living on every planet, on every sun, throughout all the galaxies of our universe, and there's an uncounted number of them, and if you compounded those numbers of people with all of the heavenly planes above until you couldn't ever count how many planets there were with people, and every planet had its own secret society, they would all say the same thing, that the Pythagorean theorem and the circle are universal.
Mm-hmm.
So you could go to any planet and you could speak that language to anybody. Now, there's a third axiom of geometrics, which is included in the book that I sent you, The Wonders of Mysteries, that shows how by dividing a line in a certain way, by using a square and a circular compass, you can create what's called the sacred cut, the golden ratio. And that is the third greatest mystery of all geometrics. The golden ratio is included in the serpent so many times we haven't been able to find all of them yet. But in the book that I sent you, you'll be able to see at least seven or eight of them. And I think you'll enjoy that when you look at it. But in any case, in my book, The Mystery of the Serpent Mound, I discuss that, several instances of it. And also, in Star Mounds, I discuss the utilization of the golden ratio, along with the discussion on the serpent and its relation to the circle.
Yeah, I remember the your explanation of the sacred cut, and I really didn't understand it prior to coming to the summer solstice celebration at the Serpent Mound. And your explanation of it really brought me to clear understanding of that portion of sacred geometry that has been wisdom within you concerning the sacred cut. And so I thank you for that explanation and just the whole entire presentation. And I believe you only had a 60-minute session as well. It was very intriguing, and it really resonated with everything that I've been trying to study and to take into heart as far as how everything has been coming into place with my, the wisdom and the education of this mystery school of things that is coming into my awareness. And so I thank you for that explanation. You definitely bring it down to a very simplistic level to where you shake the person's hand in understanding, and as opposed to speaking far and above where there's just no way of finding any common denominator to that.
Oh, that's very kind of you to say that. That's what I'm trying to do. That's what I want to do to get through to more people. See, the serpent is the perfect teaching tool because, if you get past the Bible says the serpent was evil. If you get past that, all other world cultures kind of pronounce the serpent as some sort of a sacred mystical symbol that gives us a great deal of the knowledge of the word of God or the logos of the creator. And the Egyptians believed that the serpent was Nehebkah, the serpent of many coils, the instrument by which Aten, or the great, formless one, was able to create all the worlds. In other words, the proton is the building block by which all matter is created. It takes, the proton in various numerical formats to create the various elements. Like, one proton is hydrogen, two protons is helium. When you get up to six, it's carbon. And by the time you get up to 16, you have sulfur. And then when you get to 79, it's gold, 80 is mercury. But every one of the elements looks different to our eyes, but it's all composed of the same basic building block.
Yes.
And that's the proton. And that is also, and this is a bit of mystery for you, Joel, the proton is actually the same as the human soul. We're only as big as one proton, but the difference between our souls and the stuff that matter is made of is that we were initiated by God, And this happened a long time ago, and we became living protons or living conscious entities. And we're the elite, the elect of all the matter of creation. Now, matter of creation can be dissolved, but at some point, God chose us, little particles of the proton, and initiated the holy breath in us, and we became living protons. And we're able to think and respond and actually grow in our spiritual powers and grow in size. And even though many of the ancient souls that are alive throughout the universe appear to be as brilliant as 1,000 suns, at the very core of every soul, there's a tiny little pearl, and that little pearl is the proton.
Oh, wow.
And that's a great mystery. You know, that is a great teaching that I'm going to be giving out to more and more people. And we as souls inhabit these bodies that are made from the seed that came from our mothers and fathers. And so when we're given these bodies, we recognize the fact that we found very fertile ground, and so we're able to activate the seven churches or seven chakras, the seven temples on our spinal column, but mainly it's the one between the eyes, and that's where the sound current, the logos, is heard. Now, the lower animals, they can't do this. You know, even the dolphin doesn't have that ability yet, even though we attribute great intelligence to the cat family and the horses and the elephants and so forth.
Absolutely.
And the dolphins. They really require, and this is the teachings of the saints and the masters of all the higher aspects of the religions, that we require the human form before we can truly come to know ourselves, know that we are, you know, potentially the gods or the saints of God again. And so the animals have to aspire to the human form, and they get it. But you go through this series of incarnations they call 88 locks. You can remember it because there's the same number of keys on a piano, 88. And after you go through these 88 locks, which is something like 8,800,000 births in lower forms, mineral form, insect form, water life, fishes and reptiles, then you get up to many different types of birds, and then you get into the quadrupeds and animals and the lower gorillas and things like that. Finally, you get a birth to the human form. And then your soul, which started out as a proton, you know, went through the mineral stages at first, it has grabbed enough knowledge from watching and learning, and then it's developed all this central nervous system through all these different incarnations of lower forms, that it's allowed to have the privilege of the human form. So you see what you, Joel, and me, Ross, had to go through before we were allowed to have the human form.
Yes.
But once you get it, you've got it. Then you can get initiation and truly accelerate your growth and become like Jesus Christ or Buddha or any of the great ancient masters, Quetzalcoatl.
Yes.
All of them achieved that high enlightenment, knew how to rise above body consciousness, which is what my master taught, and learn how to rise above the body itself, which is the shape of the universe, and become as one with God. And God is so happy, you know, the great spirit is so happy to see us come back to her, or to come back to him, whichever you choose, that there's a great celebration is in the highest heavens. When the soul who started out on this path as a mineral, as a proton, makes it back and becomes illuminated, and you're never made to become a proton again. You forever can live among all of the masters and all of the saints and the gods as one, and you know, truly a god, truly a micro god, just a miniature form. And then they say you come back to the whatever planet you're assigned to, and you start teaching. And when you come back, you're already self-realized and God-realized, and so you can help others. So at this time in Earth's history, many, many thousands of it starts out with just a few dozen, but we're coming into a time over the next 50 years when hundreds of masters are coming back to help teach the the millions and millions who will be seeking that initiation. Because what the heck, once you have the human form, why not get initiation if you can? Because it's a rare opportunity that you're being given. So, you know, we're going to set up, hopefully, God willing, a seat of initiation at the Serpent Mound in Adams County, aptly named, you know, Adam.
Right. I remember you mentioned that from our last conversation. And when you mentioned that and said that and vocalized that, everyone, I believe there might have been four or five people that were following you and your walk back to the rest of the festivities, and everybody was just like astounded. Oh, Adams County, Adam.
And the serpent, you know.
And the serpent, and how it all relates and ties in together. And now, just talking about the serpent in itself, you know, I've come from a Catholic and Christian background, and just the intonation of serpent in itself has some negative connotation. But I believe that's in the process in itself, in the acknowledging of this wisdom, that when you are able to go past the egoic fear of what the serpent is all about, and to delve more into the deeper levels and realms of what the serpent actually means in Revelation, it becomes all the more astounding, intriguing, synchronistic, and very not only magical but miraculous in its sense.
Well, are you familiar with the ancient Greek story about the phoenix rising?
Oh yes, definitely.
Okay, sure. Well, here's something that I don't know.
Ross, before we get into that, we do have a couple seconds left within this segment. So I would just like to intervene just for a quick second and to take us into station identification break.
Right.
But when we return back to Quantum Mindfulness Radio, we will be returning back in conversation with Douglas Ross Hamilton, who is one of the many wisdom-filled individuals who has definitely for sure in knowledge base, and not only upon the scientific or the philosophical, but also within the spiritual realms and things concerning the Great Serpent Mound, its builders, and within what is actually happening within our human landscape as it refers to Mother Gaia, Father Sky, and to many other revelations and awakenings that are taking us into another level of existence. So thank you, Ross. We will be talking further about this on the next segment of Quantum Mindfulness Radio.
Hi, this is inspirational speaker Wambui Bahati, and you're listening to BBS Radio. If it's not mainstream, it's on BBS.com.
Hi guys, this is Angelica Redland. Now you can listen to my music from the CD So Far here at BBS Radio. If you like it, do check out my website, angelicaredland.com. You can also visit my MySpace, and it's myspace.com/angelicaredland. Take care and hugs to y'all.
And so now we are back to Quantum Mindfulness Radio on the second segment of the show. And I have with me my dear friend, Douglas Ross Hamilton, my very special guest for tonight's show, as we will be continuing our conversation on spirituality, sacred geometry, revelation, global awakening, and the significance of what Ross has been emphasizing frequently from our many past conversations, the rise of the phoenix.
Yeah, phoenix rising. That's really my mission, Joel, in a manner of speaking. It's a big part of my mission, is getting people to know that the ancient myth of the phoenix, which came to us from Egyptian and Greek sources, actually is based upon a world myth that existed before Egypt and Greece took on their national identities, as we think of them historically. And that is a story about a great figure on the landscape of North America that serves as a sort of melting pot for the light of a dimming Atlantis and Lemuria, and forms this third continent, at one time a continent of light. And the story goes that in the beginning, God created the Logos, or the Word, and it took the form of the great serpent, the Hebka, which is what they call it in Egypt. Now, in Greece, they called it the Python, after whom Pythagoras took his name. But the serpent is used to create the atom, which is what we call the proton, from the building block of all matter. But he was also sent to create the atun, or, you know, the atman, the soul. And they're actually very similar, the proton and the soul of man, only the second one, the unseen, the invisible God, worked through his instrument, the great serpent, to put the holy breath. And so when the serpent regurgitated the soul of man, which you see in the Orphic Mysteries, among others, you see this basic premise of the birth of the soul as being a superior entity to the proton. And then the soul goes, and we already discussed the various embodiments, starting with mineral, which, again, Rumi talked about. I started as mineral and died as mineral and became a plant. I died as a plant and became, you know, a fish. I died as a fish and became a horse or a quadruped. And finally, after all these births, I had the honor of being given the form of the God-man, you know, the shape of the universe, the macrocosm. And going through that process, the soul, which has the divinity breathed into it, sees itself over as a master of matter. So the enlightened soul in the human form, it really has dominion over things made of the proton, because we're all the same essence. So man, when he's fully endowed with his mental capacities and spiritual capacities, with nothing inhibiting him, can command the matter of the earth in the same way that Jesus commanded the water and commanded wine to turn, or water to turn into wine. You can manipulate molecules with your very thought when the mind is completely cleansed and purified. So during this process, the Lord, who is he's the sort of the chairman of the theater committee, if you will. I don't want to exalt the great master, because he's really the great ceremonial master. I don't want to exalt him too much, because everybody knows him by a different name. He incarnated as many different masters in order to get many different points of view that people tend to develop. That's why there were seven great world religions and probably seven perennial great philosophies, including Taoism, that pretty much embody all of the thought processes of man, because we tend to accumulate things in terms of 7 and 24 and, of course, 1, the unity. Everything is in duality. And so, anyway, we do these things in order to embody as souls. So, as the theater has prescribed, we create the great serpent to serve as a symbol for the Logos. And in the serpent's mouth is held this thing that could either be the solar representation, soul, the sun, or Sol, you know. And one is the son of God, or the son of man, which is the son of God embodied in the man form. And the other one is the sun in the sky, but they're analogous to each other because everything is made of protons, and all protons are the God particle, you know, as so to speak. Not the one physicists look after, but our physicists are insatiably curious, and they continually smash it. But inside the proton, likely there are 24 particles, and that's the 24 elders sitting around the throne being the fundamental basis for all creation, the proton. So, as the theater progresses, the serpent rises above and takes his seat on Mackinac Island. And on Mackinac Island, he releases all of his glorious divinity, and this nurtures the seven mighty golden cities, the same cities that Coronado was searching for. But by that time, the Indian memory wasn't awakened enough or recalled well enough to tell Coronado where they were. But they extended from those cities that we mentioned before, and that whole body started. The seven cities started processing the etheric light, which we call water right now in the Gulf of Mexico, and turned it into an etheric essence, releasing all of its life force, you know, like matter really is energy. But when we have this thing going on, this great machinery, the spiritual machinery of the Phoenix and the seven processing centers, and these all exist within our bodies too, so this is just an example, then that picture of the Phoenix came to life and grew into its fullness for 1,000 years and spread its light and life throughout the grid to all points of this darkened planet. Well, it reaches its apex, and all these other little figures come to life in the surface of the planet. We have this wonderful golden age that lasts for several centuries, which is really a relatively short time, because the Phoenix goes through this cycle where it begins to deteriorate for 1,000 years, and it becomes a serpent, a lowly little worm in the Ohio Valley again. And during this time, we begin to forget that we're all ascended masters. But during the time of the ascending Phoenix, we eat well, we see God, we fall in love with the Creator, and we get the spiritual technology that enables us to make these amazing gardens in which we can grow fruits that are luminous with light. And so we grow to the full potential of our DNA, and we become 10 feet tall. Some of us grow even taller. They say that Adam and Eve were like 10 feet tall. They were like the average, but some of the sons of Adam and Eve grew to be 12 feet tall. The potential for man growing is really quite limitless, and if man wishes to inhabit one of the elite gardens off of the Phoenix, when the Phoenix goes down, you can leave and live in one of the elite havens that surround the Earth and grow to be 25 feet tall, 50 feet tall, because the environments of the etherealized environments of the havens, of which Atlantis and Lemuria are part of their mainstays for many different havens. We call them fairy realms in the vernacular of the insular Celtic mythologies. The Elysian fields by the Greeks, the happy hunting grounds of the Native Americans, you know, the Shangri-Las of the Indians and the Turks and so forth. These are all havens that exist in this day, but they're more etherealized. And so the people live, the Chinese say that in their gardens, you can live to be millions of years old. I've read it in some of the Taoist scriptures. Literally, you can live as old as the earth. But if you're lucky, you take part in the life cycle of the Phoenix. And I'll tell you why that's lucky. Many of us serve the light of the Phoenix. And so during the 5,000 years of darkness, we still incarnate and we suffer through the gravity and all of the misanthropy and the abuse of women and children and animals, and we deny the existence of a God, and we become very dark. And so we pursue gold, and we pursue the pleasures that money, gold, can buy. And as a result of that, and I say we because, essentially that's our darkest nature, and we're all very much alike. And so as the Phoenix has gone away, and the Serpent Mound has been regarded more as an Indian earthwork that was made by a primitive culture worshiping serpents, you see that as the knowledge begins to come back, we suddenly begin to do this reversal beginning in 2012 officially, and the Phoenix begins to rise as we recognize that we're living inside of this picture of a great Phoenix that takes up most of eastern United States, if not all, and Canada, way out to the what we call the Midwest and out to the Atlantic Ocean and so forth. And so as this Phoenix begins to become illuminated, it's done through a specific spiritual science that operates in such a way as to stimulate a connection with the spiritual body of the Earth, which our science knows nothing about, but we have causal and astral bodies, just like the human form has a physical body. Internal to us is an astral body that most people live in after they die. It's in the same shape and looks like the physical body, but it's no imperfections. And then there's the causal body within us, which is the causal plane. Very, very, very subtle. And it's the angelic body, you know, like the archangels live in it. And so, you know, the Earth has a similar system. And what we do is the shape of the phoenix is on a specific part of the Earth grid, which goes all over the Earth. It's like a crisscross grid, very subtle and very small. And it's very much in the shape of a continuous number of hexagons. Different people have made the Earth grid seem to look like a tennis ball or a baseball or a volleyball or a soccer ball or any one of a number of other things that connect up their sacred sites. And so there's at least 20 different grids that people have created. But really, there's one grid, and it's just a bunch of little hexagons. So we can create any figures we want anywhere of the theater. But the phoenix is the one that consistently is the same. And so as the phoenix is realigned, and we begin to pump energy into those specific filaments of the grid, we see the phoenix rise. And we see the dark matter of the Earth and of nature begin to dissolve and float away as a mist, kind of like the story of Brigadoon, where, you know, or High Brazil, where this island rises out. You know, once every 100 years, you can go and visit Brigadoon, and it's still, you know, it's like the Amish. They still live like they did 100 years ago. And it's a fairy realm, what we call an etherealized realm. And there's more of those kinds of realms than there are of our corporeal realm, believe it or not. But as the phoenix rises, more and more of the eastern United States and Canada down in the Gulf become etherealized. And so you make more and more contact with creatures and people that live in these other realms. So, believe it or not, I'm going into some detail, and there are many controls put over this, so there's nothing to worry about, but there are realms where dinosaurs still live, etherealized realms of the Earth, and there are realms where angels commune with man. Yeah, and there's 7 main havens on the Earth, and they correspond to these 7 frequencies of the chakras. But each of them can connect with a different etheric realm. So the Earth is overpopulated now because it's an opportunity for people that want to see this process firsthand to actually take part in it. So you see an enormous immigration of people coming to the United States and anywhere else that the masters have designated as ground zero for the light appearing in the form of a figure on the landscape. Now, in the beginning, it'll take the form of, like, spiritual islands. You know, Serpent Mound is on an island. It's in the shape of that hexagonal grid. But there's many, many other islands similar to it all over the planet. And anybody that goes to those islands will pretty much be safer than people that aren't. But ultimately, as the phoenix rises, there's going to be so much light being released that people may as well forget about being greedy and just give away all your money and never kill any more animals, and you pretty much be safe from the light as the phoenix rises. Just stop being greedy and harmful to anybody in any way, and just trust in the spirit within you and without to take care of you. Become a saint, you know, to the best of your ability, even though it might seem like a tremendous insurmountable task. Just give it all up and give out, and you'll be safe. But otherwise, if you can't do that, you will not survive this wonderful revelation that's about to happen. George Frederick Handel quoted scripture when he said, "And all flesh shall see it together. But for some who are very thick with the darkness, embedded in the darkness, it'll be like a nuclear bomb went off. Your flesh will be torn off, and it's bye-bye. And wherever you've attained spiritually, that's where you'll go for that 1,000 years or wherever, or whatever time you're allotted. So it's not that hard. It's not that hard. Be true to your spouse. You know, be in love. Give whenever you feel it needs to be given. Don't be a people pleaser. That's not necessary. Just do what you are bid to do. Follow your faith, follow your bliss, whatever is your love, you know, as Joseph Campbell used to tell us. So, you know, it's happening. And it's analogous to the story that the Greeks and the Egyptians left us. And it also is analogous to the spiritual process that we all have within us when we have that human form. I might add that the one we call Jesus, Buddha, Muhammad, Rumi, you know, Moa, and everybody that's ever been a messianic figure, Guru Nanak, in the past, is coming back in the form of the great ceremonial master, and that ceremonial master, I believe, is going to make his first appearance in 2017 or 2018, something like that. And some of the work that I'm doing is kind of like a precursor to announcing the coming of the master. And that master will be initiating people and explaining all the mysteries of the phoenix and trying to get people to meditate and so forth, and just pretty much being an early warning system for the phoenix rising. So we can look forward to that. Michigan, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Indiana, Wisconsin, Illinois, Kentucky, Tennessee, all of those states are blessed. They're all going to become part of the great Edenic field complex again. And the people that farm on those lands, well... Yeah, anyway, you know, it's all a very natural process, too. It's not like we're being invaded by aliens, because we're not. Because, you know, the aliens are us. You know, anybody that's incarnated here from some higher plane has to take on the human form. And for that, we're all created equal, like Thomas Jefferson said. You know, we're all made equal.
Now, for me, Russ, on the psychiatric unit, since I am a psych nurse myself, and just the approach of seeing different people in a different light, not as a diagnosis, nor from their own skin color or nationality, as they come walking through the double doors of the psychiatric unit here, but as one is able to surpass what is observed from their eyes, let alone from their five senses, truth becomes an awareness that goes way beyond the apparent limitations, and just to view and observe more of humanity within this light, that light, this approach as entities and as a species, where we are in actuality more or less connected and in unity as opposed to being separate. And when we can see this unity as the common denominator from amongst all of us, once we are to surpass the clutter, the diversion, the complexity of things, then shall we all see that this whole experience comes from many different interpretations, different stories, but they all come together in unity once we have all run the course through this grand musical stage performance, where the performer is the audience and the audience is the performer. And Ross, this is the root of what this whole entire experience is all about, becoming aware of this fact, passed all through the illusion. And the only way to do this is through the closer and more intuitive examination of self, the self through meditation. And yes, you have made many references before, Ross, to our many, many set conversations about the power, indeed, of meditation, and in how there is a spiritual enlightenment involved, and movement, for that matter, for this practice, within meditation specifically, to look within ourselves for the answers, and to finding ourselves from within, from what had been forgotten, which is essentially the last frontier, not space in itself as what was once taught of billions and billions of light years away, but essentially from that which is found from within.
Absolutely. It's within, and that's the key of the whole thing. Reverse your attention. Focus on the seat of the soul. It's behind the eyes where the optic nerves meet, and that will stimulate your pineal That's the best way to do it. I mean, there's certain foods you can eat that'll help you too. Carrots, I mean, help, and lots of orange juice and fresh, you know, vitamin-rich things. And you know, there's also certain herbs that can be used that will help to stimulate your pineal. But mostly it comes from your own hard effort of reversing your attention. Yeah, you know, have you ever felt somebody's eyes on you, Joel? We all have. Yeah, and when you stare at somebody, sometimes they'll be shocked and they'll turn around and look at you. Because there's a lot of power in the attention. And if you can learn to reverse your attention, you'll have more burning power to cut through to see the light of your own soul and God within you than any amount of staring outside will ever give you. So, you know, learn to turn your attention inward. Become Arvel-looking glass instead of Arvel-looking horse. Look inside yourself and see the light, see the spark, and hold to it and become divine. And that's spirituality. That's the birth of your spirituality right there. Never let it go. Become divine. That's what the serpent represents. That's our phoenix rising.
And Ross, yes, what a beautiful description of not only a philosophy of sorts, but of an inspiring representation of spirituality that is actually paralleling what is happening today in evolution. As more and more people are awakening within us now, this presence, our reality, the beginning of a so-called 2,000 years of an awakening, indeed, as Earth is being graced once more by the hand of God, and for which many Catholics and Christians may refer to as once more heaven placed dearly again upon Earth.
Yeah.
Well, Ross, this has just been an amazing experience for me. Definitely an honor and a privilege to having you here on the show. Yes, Mr. Douglas Ross Hamilton, author of The Mystery of the Serpent Mound, A Tradition of Giants and Star Mounds, and yes, a wonderful and dear friend. Ross, the great awakening continues. Yes.
Yeah, Phoenix Rising.
The Phoenix Rising, yes, indeed. So bless you, my dear friend, and have a wonderful, wonderful journey here. And I thank you, dear listeners, for joining us here on Quantum Mindfulness Radio.
you had missed this show or any other previous broadcasts, please visit us at Quantum Mindfulness Radio's official website at www.quantummindfulnessradio.com. Again, that is www.quantummindfulnessradio.com. All previous and prior broadcasts are archived on the BBS Radio Network. Please join us every other Monday, 8 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, only on the BBS Radio Network. Again, I thank you once more for joining us here tonight on Quantum Mindfulness Radio.